I'm just kind of mapping at a higher level the sort of process associated with an application round, and then we can sort of delve into the detail a little bit. But I'm assuming that we'll initially use rounds, and so, you know, there'd be a round where applications are called for. That round would have a start date. The applications for that round would be date stamped as they are received and essentially form a queue. And then there's a close date for that application round. After the application round is closed, you would then work on identifying stream conflicts and those processes we're talking about for publishing strings and getting feedback on whether there's any issues with the strings and so on would apply. Where there is a string conflict, and I've just given the simplest example, so two applicants want .sport, then there needs to be some mechanism for resolving that conflict. Now, in the draft report, and I guess where we were in, where were we last time we talked about this, somewhere in the world, there's kind of two approaches really to dealing with a straightforward conflict like that. One was some sort of objective process, whether it was a lottery or an auction, or whether we use some sort of comparative evaluation and you try and pick whatever's the best application. So one of the things I want to do today is see how that has changed with respect to public comment. I know there's been a few legal questions raised, for example, of whether a lottery or an auction is a possible method, let alone whether it's a good policy or not, but whether it's legally possible. And then once string conflicts are resolved, you would then process the applications in order of receipt on a first-come, first-served basis. So there's a benefit for those that are organised and put their applications in. The sorts of things, there are a number of variables here, obviously, is when is the start date, when is the close date. I was kind of thinking that this might be 3 months after the start date, for example, and the start date might be, 3 months after the board approved policy, something. I'm not trying to lock these in, but just give a sense of it, so that we're not talking about 1 week processes, we're not talking about 12-month processes,
So the way you've got it set up is string conflicts, the date stamp and string conflicts have nothing to do with each other. There's no first come, first serve notion in two applicants for single string.
Well, that's something that could be considered. I think that was the concept that you're actually doing the round and you're linking those together, and then you have a method of resolving those string conflicts. If you move to first come, first serve at that basis, I wouldn't really recommend that just based on experience of starting up new CLDs. You'll get slammed and all sorts of strange things happening there.
You're not here saying how many main applications might be accommodated in a round, because you could hypothetically
close it after a certain number of applications.
You may, in the practicality, I don't want to put this into the policy, but the practicality is the first round or two is probably going to be more time intensive on administrative functions than perhaps later rounds will be.
Yes, and what I'm envisaging is that over time you might run one or two rounds and then apply as you go, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just trying to contrast this with what happened when registrars first started up. There was an initial test fed round and five were selected, and then after that it was kind of as you go, but they still tended to be processed in batches, and various things like that have happened. There's various reasons for doing batches and applications that have emerged in the marketplace. But
if you're resolving conflicts, potential conflicts, even if you have a desire to have a process that is a continuum of applications, if you're resolving conflicts, you still need a closing date whereby you think...
Well, I would kind of
have conflicts within that.
Yeah, but what I'm envisaging here, Philip, is let's say that 2 years later, let's say we do a round this year, or so a round in 2007, another round is done in 2008. You kind of notice the number of applications dropping off, potentially. Then I think that the really your conflicts are not such an issue in terms of amongst the applicants. The conflicts are more related to whether they're confusingly similar to existing TLDs. Yeah. So,
Bruce, if I could interject something. When we talk about number two, or actually process applications in order to receive first-come, first-serve approach, it occurs to me that there may be a problem with claim jumping, which is that I know that these folks want .dot Berlin. You know, if I could get my application in, you know, the day before they did, you know, have I, you know, why should I get in the queue first? And
the best thing is about the room, what I'm trying to identify there is the two people who want to lock their room, that's what they've dealt with this in conflict. We work out how to do with that. So it could be an option, or it could be a lottery, or it could be a gateway to this application. If you're talking about what's not going to get in before lock their room?
No, I was thinking about, you know, the people who applied in 2000.go.union.iii. all sorts of other things that are out there that, you know, is someone now going to, you know, try to jump those by...
Is that because they're not going to be reading
in that initial three-month period? No, I think they will be. I mean, I assume that anyone who's left over from 2000 is going to be on the, you know,
so
first round.
What I'm saying is, that's still what I would step forward. But there's a method of dealing with the fact that two people put forward on here that's separate to the first one, first third.
Okay, so you only get to six after you've resolved the...
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
But the intent is to separate that we've got Melbourne and Dr. Lee, which all of our process
okay.
But if there's two Dr. Lee's, we deal with that step four and identify which one of Dr. Lee's is using.
And that's still a...
Okay.
So that process, whatever it is that we haven't agreed,
yes.
we'll take place. Okay, I got it. Thanks. All right, sorry. Thanks.
Now, and the other thing here, I want to just focus on how we can deal with a straightforward conflict if they're exactly the same string. So things that we could talk about a little bit further, just from putting these on the table. Is what constitutes a string conflict, what is similar. So what if there was a doc sport and a doc spot? You know, should we be dealing with that as a string conflict? And then there's a language and script issues that we heard earlier that a operator might want to suggest several TLDs in several languages or several scripts, and whether we want to deal with that separately. But let's just deal with a straightforward case. So let's say I have two applicants for dot sport. My first question, and this is because there's been some public comments on this, but the two methods that have been proposed in the initial report, and we haven't selected either one of them yet, one method proposed was to use some sort of lottery or auction, in other words, an objective process, or the other one was to use some sort of comparative evaluation process. On the auction versus auction lottery process, just wondering whether Dan can give any further input on that as to whether the ICANN staff or the legal counsel believe that there would be any legal impediments to it, to that kind of approach.
No formal opinions are what they go. It's a question that's been asked, so
I think I need a little bit of feedback though, because otherwise I don't want to go down a rat hole of this.
Well, I have a question.
Yeah.
In the experience we had with one of the earlier names that used what was considered a lottery in the United States, and
but it didn't have a lottery license. So I'm saying it's not. Doesn't mean you couldn't have had a lottery.
Mm-hmm.
There, but,
right.
You know,
right.
They didn't go and get a license.
I understand, but.
Yeah.
So,
legally, Alan, there's options of...
Well, I mean, there's a difference between a lottery and an auction. And the biz issue was a lottery. And I don't know that that's what we're talking about here. I don't think there's any legal problem with an auction. But, you know, obviously, I think that's a long part. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just trying to identify a feel for that. I mean, we know auctions are used. We know various versions of lottery are used. Lottery essentially being, you know, you apply and we pick one randomly. There's been variations of that used in the domain name space as well.
So I guess we'd go very carefully. If you guys recommended that I can run a lottery, we suggest that to very careful review before we went through with it. And if there's the business with the first business, it's also a different, for instance, they were a for-profit company, it's going to depend on whether we're a non-profit, and sometimes non-profits can do things like churches hold raffles or schools hold raffles. So it could be different, and we would do careful analysis, but I wouldn't tell you at this point, no, I don't consider that. You know, first of all, it doesn't look like that's the way you're going to go, but I wouldn't spend 8 hours figuring out that, and this is how to run a lottery.
No. If I could just add one more clarification. Random selection is not a lottery either. I mean, there's no problem with taking 10 and picking one at random. Well, a lottery is that I pay for the opportunity of being one of the 10, and then if you don't pick me, I don't get my money back. You know, I paid $50,000. Yeah, I mean, and I don't get my money back. You took my money for the chance. Yeah. Random selection's okay. It's when I pay my money for a chance of getting something, and then if I don't win, I lose my money. You paid, and if you didn't get your name, you still got the money.
That's a lottery.
You lose
your fee.
Right.
The selection, yeah. Point you would do, you would offer such a activity, given that if we're far along in the evaluation phase, then a fair amount of the fee already paid have been spent on evaluation.
Yes, so I guess what you're trying to do, and that is a good point, is when you deal with this. I'm kind of suggesting in this process that string conflict is dealt with fairly early on, before you go into the, like, in other words, you wouldn't spend all the money doing a full evaluation.
That's right, but I just...
Well, that's one option.
I want to say something about the impact of additional fees associated with either lotteries or auctions on applicants from developing countries and applicants who have limited financial resources.
Yeah.
So yesterday we, and it's Marilyn speaking, yesterday we talked about the fact that recognizing that application fees may present a barrier to entry for some registrants, we thought that it could be considered that there be a special initiative of some kind. Today, we're going to spend some time talking about the role of auctions. And auctions, unless they're set with a different criteria than the amount of money they're going to bring, by nature will drive the cost of being a registry operator into an unpredictable area. That is, how much financing I'm going to have and what I'm going to have to spend it. Now, you could have an auction which is based on our comparative criteria, I suppose, which then makes it a concern.
Which is a different string, too. So bear in mind, this is a string conflict. So one way of dealing with a string conflict is basically saying, you choose a different string. It doesn't stop you having a CLD. So that's, just be careful that I don't think auction itself is a barrier to developing countries, because if someone in a developing country wanted to have dot sport, as long as it's not completely similar, they decided to have dot soccer or something. You know, that wouldn't be an issue. Alright, so how do we want to kind of move forward on this particular one? I guess, you know, Liz, is there a particular leaning in the
public comment process towards the sort of to an objective process versus a comparative process to be able to comment?
Definitely both ends of the spectrum. For example, Michael Heltrup on the IPC constituency said, we strongly advise against having auctions or lotteries.
And what was the reason?
based on the if everyone turns to page 14 of your executive summary document, you will see all the collection materials on allocation methods. Then there's more with respect to the public comment responses, which you can take a look at. Part of it's about graduated fee structures, which goes to part of the point Marilyn was just making about the impact of auctions and lotteries on the cost of an application. And then the other part of the commentary is from Michael Hilton particularly, who was anti, absolutely anti. And Luther might have something further to say about the way in which those comments were put together and can explain the reasons why you've arrived at that conclusion.
Well, yeah, this goes back to consultation within the intellectual property constituency, and this is indeed based on experience of the members of the IPC, because, and I think the reasons are obvious, it leads not only to a random allocation of now this is from the domain name space, obviously, of domain names, but it's also expensive, so it is a lose-lose situation. I think we feel in the IPC translates equally to the process that we're talking about here.
If you turn to page 36 of the same document, it goes along and Dirk Kershnowski from .Berlin has argued exactly the opposite. Because lotteries are probably the best way to proliferate questionable TOVs. I don't quite understand what he actually meant by that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you look at 1, 2, 3, 4th paragraph on page 36, it's not quite clear to me what Dirk actually meant. And perhaps Alexander, if you have the document there, perhaps you know what Dirk meant by that. There's a distinction here between the resolution of conflicts between the string applications and the contention for the registration of domain names themselves.
I think what Dirk is suggesting is that the that you pre-qualify.
Except for single names.
Right, so he's going to comparative evaluation. But except for lotteries for one letter. Yeah. Bruce, I think you need to be aware first, you can't ask this question in isolation to the nature of the TLD application, because if the TLD is going to be a sponsored application, it makes no sense whatsoever to not have a comparative evaluation if there is a conflict there, because at the end of the day, someone is going to be a more obvious sponsor than the other for the same string. It only makes sense in the case of non-sponsored TLDs, I think, to go forward with that. So you need to be clear that that's the context in which...
Well, I don't think based on the selection criteria we currently have a concept of sponsor or unsponsored at the moment, so it's an applicant. An applicant may choose to, if you're trying to be successful in a particular space, let's say we're dealing with the dot travel as an example, to be successful in dot travel, you want the members of the travel industry to support you, because they're ultimately going to be the registrants. So that, the way that organisation is structured makes good business sense for them to operate that. There's not a requirement to do that, because someone else could say, right, I'm just going to create dot travel and
if
you haven't got any support, probably not going to be successful.
Besides, there was a requirement in the last round.
No, I'm talking about this process.
Yeah, okay, well then you're already jumping ahead to a whole set of conclusions that we haven't got to yet.
Well, no, I'm jumping from the selection criteria. There's nothing there at the moment in what we have in the selection criteria under kind of what's in that certain majority of sponsored versus unsponsored. That's not to say that an applicant might be sponsored, that's okay, but with right now, unless you're sort of saying that you want to use that as a way of doing conflicts, if you're proposing that the way to handle stream conflicts is to create a separate category and you manage that.
Yeah, if it's usable.
Because I mean, what you're really talking about, as I think it is you're saying there's your way of dealing with stream conflicts is comparative evaluation. Then if you're going to use comparative evaluation, you then say, what are the criteria for doing that evaluation? And one of the criteria could be that that there is sponsorship from the community of people that are associated with that field. Let's take sport as an example. So I just want to take that sort of set of logical steps. So I'm still trying to see, are we shifting more towards comparative? If we are shifting more towards comparative versus using another mechanism, then if we're shifting towards comparative, then let's work out what are the criteria we might use to make that. And those criteria could be additional to the criteria just to get a TLD. So let's say one of the criteria for getting a TLD is you meet the technical criteria, your TLD is called XYZ, that's fine, you're through. Then you have .sport and .sport, and you say, okay, when we have a conflict, we then go to another layer of detail and say, well, another layer of detail is what is the support of the market or the users for that TLD for those two and make a choice on that basis.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right.
This is a cue.
Let's take the cue. I just want to, again, I want to be wary of people just repeating the constituency statements that have already been submitted as we've done all that. I'm interested in what's changed since then. So if a constituency has changed its view, I'd like to hear that now. If we're looking at how we can find a compromise between the two approaches, we should be seeking that as well.
Just a quick clarification on that direction, Bruce. By constituency statement, do you mean what was submitted, early part of the year,
or
more recent things?
I'm talking about what was submitted as part of the...
Okay, thank you.
Whatever it was called, the issues report level. So basically, Chuck, since we last discussed this, I mean, we had a discussion on allocation at one of our face-to-face meetings where each of the constituency statements reviewed in detail. What we're looking at now is we're pretty much reached the stalemate. There were two approaches. You could put it to a vote, and you might, one of those approaches would probably get a majority, but I didn't think there was a super majority coming out of there. What we want to do today is try and identify something there that we might get a super majority on. Someone's got a compromise, ultimately. So I'm interested to know whether people have thought about it some more and have other suggestions.
Tony, Alexander and Dan.
Well, my comment, Bruce, was related to the earlier conversation and having heard what you said about you don't want to get things repeated. Certainly the ISPs were of the view that we didn't want to go down the path of lotteries or auctions. And I think if we could do some work this afternoon on trying to define that second layer of criteria, it may help bring the thing together. But just a personal remark on auctions. I was probably involved in one of the worst examples of auctions ever some years ago, which was when we were bidding for 3G spectrum. We just had to have that, and we paid so much money for it, at the end of the day we couldn't implement it because there wasn't any cash there. And that's the sort of crazy situation you get into. So there are lessons to be learned which are out there in the industry. I think we should take account of those.
Tony, on that one, would you just provide me with some background information? It's very important when we're discussing the reasons why to be able to point to examples that would be effective as an option in a particular situation. This is what happens, you run out of implementation money. So just a little note.
Basically it was at a time when the whole of my company's share price was hanging on the result of that option. So I spent something like not even the best part of a month with a team of other guys daily meeting to up the bids to go back on that so that we secured it. Having secured it, there were then market changes that came about, the dot-com reverse and there were other things that came into play. And there was never the money there to put the infrastructure in which we planned as part of the bid. to actually implement it. So the whole thing just fell apart.
But we need to be careful not to target, focus on a single company. That was a Europe-wide problem.
Yeah,
the problem has existed and has been documented in spectrum auctions in the United States as well, where people have gotten the spectrum and then they have had, they've gone into bankruptcy, they've been unable to build or supply customers.
Or they've used it as a mechanism of keeping out competitors, so they don't use the spectrum, they just make sure no one else does.
That may be true, Bruce. The regulatory body...
There's different ways you can structure auctions around that, obviously, because there have been... I've read a paper on this that did quite a bit of analysis, and some countries were very successful in their process and some weren't. And there are all sorts of...
The ones that were more successful probably went when a few lessons had been learned.
Yeah, they were after.
But there are still problems there, because invariably it's the richer guys who don't compete getting in there until they win. But that doesn't really guarantee anything whatsoever.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, I wanted to explain shortly what Dirk meant. We have the impression it would be the best thing if, for example, building up the community is building up a market and a need for the top-level domain until, like, let's say, summer 2007. Then we file an application. Already everyone Berlin knows it will come. Everyone can know, if I'm the operator of .Berlin, I will maybe make a good money or so. And then someone else is also filing an application. Maybe he's not, he has not the community behind us as we do, but he's filing it and he's going into a lottery or whatever. And he gets he will be the one who is, who's the one that is, that you are better at him. So I think he wants to say, or we want to say, you should look at the application prior to the method.
I think the other observation that's worth making about lotteries, of course, about auctions, is the potential for the anti-competitive. Because if you're in a certain marketplace, and you've got a new entrant who may not be as well funded as an existing player going for an interesting piece of real estate, in this case the world's main name, the existing player is likely to be better funded and therefore better able to get that new piece of real estate, in this case the main name. And so the auction model is not necessarily a way of facilitating the ICANN core values and introducing promoting competition.
I suppose there should be a possibility before we get into resolving any string conflicts ourselves to leave the parties up to figure out whether they both want to keep the string, whether they want to kind of merge their applications, whatever, that people can get together first to discuss it, what any measures are taken, because especially with auctions, I think at the end, maybe all of the participants are losing. At least they're losing money, they're losing time, they're trying to even get the domain. If you get it, you can't use it. I mean, the example Tony was bringing for us is a very prominent one in Germany as well, where a lot of companies really spent huge amounts of money, and that could happen in our industry as well, as the same amount of money, I guess. So that's really, really a lesson that should have been learned.
It's called the limit
Okay, first of all, the registry constituency visited this issue just last week and had concerns about the possibility of a lottery along the lines that were discussed with regard to possible legal problems. Now, it could be with Brett's explanation that some of those things go away if it was a random process instead. But the constituency was very clearly opposed to
what is often referred to as a beauty contest. In fact, to quote one person, I can't remember who it was, said, beauty contests are ugly. And that's especially true if you can't really nail down very objective criteria, which would take a lot of time to do. Otherwise, it just becomes so subjective that it's problematic. Now, back to Dirk's comment and Alexander's explanation of that. First of all, the registries believe that if you use something like an auction or even a lottery, a random process, something like that, you would first of all, before you got there, make sure that you have qualified applicants. They don't even get that far if they're not qualified. They have to meet the requirements. Now, I think another issue that comes up, as I was thinking as you were talking, so let's capture that, Chuck, because that's something that's not really captured here. You qualify the candidates for the application first.
Pre-qualified, yeah.
Pre-qualified before you ever get to whatever process you're using.
So the first step of resolving the string conflict is So the first step of resolving the string conflict is deal with the application.
Right, and if that may actually eliminate
trouble.
If it doesn't, then you go to whatever the next step is.
Yeah.
Now, with regard to let's just use the Dot Berlin example, so I think it's a good one. And this may raise a totally new issue that crossed my mind as you were talking. Let's say that Dot Berlin actually, and your organization could actually be the only one that's left after a pre-qualification. If in fact we come to a policy decision that in cases where there's a distinct community, those kind of applications should come from a sponsoring organization. Now this is a new thought. This is not a registry constituency thing. But when you think about it, if you do have a very defined community, is that a case where we should actually expect an application from a sponsor that has the support from that community? To me, that's not an unreasonable expectation in certain types of GTLDs. Not all of them, but this is my mind going live right now on that, because as he's talking, I realize if I'm from Berlin, you know, I don't want somebody that's an outsider coming in and just saying, hey, I want to run this thing for my own motive, whatever that motive might be. And certainly, it wouldn't be a good idea to use an auction or a lottery to select that person. You qualify them first, but then and the qualification could, depending on what policy is adopted, eliminate people who don't have a sponsoring organization from the applicable community. Eliminate them that way. Throw this.
We're saying that the leaders of the type of application is based on a geographic place or based on a shared word or something that requires some form of demonstrating if there is a conflict, there's some sort of sponsorship. The other approach is that the next one there will only be okay, and somebody can get that from some reason for having a particular means, they decide to use it for creating their own GPS coordinates or something. That wouldn't necessarily apply to conflict of sponsorship, like usage or something. But I just want to, it seems to me that it's probably worth exploring how to go about evaluation further
if we spend a little bit of time thinking about what the criteria for that might be. I know the registry constituency has pushed back on what you call beauty contests, but I just want to kind of say this is not using that
in the past, we sort of had rounds, like in the 2000 round, we essentially were saying, you know, here's, we're going to create this small number of utilities. So I've got, it's more a case of I've got 10 slots and I've got 100 applications, and I'm trying to use a beauty contest to decide which of the 100 applications get the 10 slots. This is a little different. This is sort of saying, only in the case where we have two people asking for the same TLD, do we go to a level of comparative evaluation. And I think there probably is some merit, or I'm getting a sense that the community would, the broader community would probably favour that more than they would an auction in the sense of some of the things that Tony's raised, etc. So then the issue is we have to do a little bit more thinking about what are the criteria.
But you have to be really concerned about what the criteria are, because I don't care if it's just two that you're doing in it or a round, like you said.
Mm.
Bottom line, it is a comparative evaluation, and to the extent that the criteria is not objective and measurable, it is then subjective, and that's where the beauty contest comes in.
So can we just get some suggestions of criteria there?
Because we can meet your criteria relatively simply. You know, maybe there's a lot of money. Well, what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to converge on something in that case. I'm saying I've got two things. I've got one is the factual random, I've got some of the comparative evaluation, which is a bit of a conflict. And I'm saying, all right, let's try and explore one of these in some more detail comparative evaluation and see if we've got something that other those that were against them initially would both take a little more comfortable with that correct something.
Yeah, I just wanted to speak in support of Chuck's point that as between two applications for the same strain, that you know, some preference for a sponsored application over an unsponsored application, I was thinking about the same Berlin example, because I thought also it was a good one, that you know, with all the support that they've got from the community, you know, my application for Dot Berlin, you know, should not, even if I was qualified technically to operate the registry, you know, and had the financial wherewithal to do it, sort of met all the objective criteria, there's some subjective criteria that I wouldn't meet. And I think that really has to come into play for something like that.
So what would you, what would be some examples to try to document your community support as well as talking about there?
Yeah. I don't know if it necessarily needs to be sponsored, but yeah, documented community support.
Well, really avoid that terminology.
Yeah.
And then how would you measure that? So a lot of letters from the
community,
or letters from...
Yeah, what's your major personality? Take your own, like, sports examples, a football
example. Yeah, that's cool.
The World Football Association or whatever, and you've got all the direction where the various football associations will say, I need to go down. So,
actually, I think it has to be more than, I think it has to be, I mean, documented community support, I would assume, is something like the kind of community support that people have delivered in the past. Letters which show that they have established a relationship, and I don't know, Alexander might want to comment more on this, but letters that show they've contacted more than individuals, they've gone to organizations and entities who are active in a sector, and brief them on their proposal and sought their endorsement. And I think we saw...
So if we went down this direction, because I just want to be conscious of the cost of doing these applications as well, would it then be that it would go into a second phase where both entities have the opportunity to build that support? Because one way of doing this is to say, the application process, you know, you just like the registrar accreditation proposal, you're meeting all the technical criteria, et cetera, et cetera. So you're not spending $100,000 on, you know, doing some huge marketing thing when you're going to get through anyway.
Exactly. You should show the initiative of doing it in advance. Otherwise, why am I, you know...
Because you don't know
There's competition for them. But what I'm getting at is we're trying to get the cost down for people to, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And Ken, if you're saying that MCAID is her esteemed qualifications to operate sports CLD, and Philip Shepherd, who's obviously more qualified, have been out trying to engender support from the same parties, you know, I bet that's right. But one of us will be have a better business plan, a better strategy, and I'll be a better salesperson, so I'll have more support. But the point is, that needs to happen before. We should not be guaranteeing a business opportunity. We're expanding the namespace for the good of the Internet and the good of the users. It does create business opportunities while we do that. But I don't see any need to guarantee to an applicant that they're going to make it through the process.
Well, but at the same time, how far do you have to reach out in order to...
Yeah, I think I'm just sort of concerned about the cost issues here, because if you know you're in a direct competition with someone for that particular TLD, you might spend, it's a bit like Tony said, it's not that dissimilar to an auction. You might decide to spend $10 million on doing huge outreach and hiring PR consultants, etc., etc. Because you don't know whether someone else is going to drop their in, for example. It could be that there wasn't going to be any contention, so... I'm just kind of making sure we're not getting out of another option scenario here with all the same problems.
There are other issues around this, Bruce. I realise the way you've done this is to break it up into segments. I think that's the right way to do it. But at some stage it has to come together and you have to look at the totality of it.
Absolutely.
And with the approach that Jack put forward, I think if you can go down that path, one of the things we discussed earlier today was the public policy issues and throwing them to the CAC.
Yes.
And they're very, very complex. But I would suggest that if you follow the route that Chuck put forward, where you've got community support, it's probably somewhat easier for the GAC to resolve some of the public policy issues with an appropriate community, rather than to face those policy issues when it could be anybody. So I think it may be something that they would welcome, that would ease their pains when they look at the related public policy issues as well. That is another big cost element, potentially.
To make sure everybody understands, I wasn't proposing that for all possible new TLDs, but I think in some situations it's a very good fit.
Yeah, and I'm specifically dealing with the case of string conflict too. I want to narrow it down to that, that we're looking at potentially some additional criteria. If you don't have additional criteria, you're basically less successful.
You could have contention on two TLDs where a sponsorship wouldn't even fit, so it was what I'm saying.
Yes. I mean, comparative evaluation was used for .NET, the most recent one I can think of, where it's basically a bunch of people that want the same stream. And that was dealt with on technical grounds, basically. Pretty much purely technical grounds. Sorry? I know it was, but in terms of the evaluation, the criteria for the evaluation weren't level of documented community support, really. It was more based on, you know, which one had the best technical resources on it.
There is a queue. I have Vianna, Tom, Ray, Dan, and Ken. But I just want to ask a clarifying question before we move on. The discussion that you've talked about in terms of sponsorship and documented community support assumes an existing community offline that wishes to be represented online. How do you deal with a community that does not yet exist or is coming into fruition or is developing? So, for example, someone made the example yesterday, eBayers. How do you deal with a community that has not coalesced into something that can demonstrate documented community support in the time frames that we're establishing for an application process?
It lives, hasn't that? We've seen that happen in some situations with new TLDs already. The communities have coalesced and therefore have been able to organize and prepare for that. I'm not saying that's easy.
But bear in mind it's relative. So both
No, but I just want to be clear. We're not comparing the community.travel versus the community.ebayers, okay? We're comparing the community of ebayers versus the community of ebayers. And so both people putting forward that string have the same opportunity. And you're right, obviously, depending on the string, you could put together a huge community. But we're only dealing with two people going to the same string. They both have the same opportunity to demonstrate their support. And their support, both of them might only have one person has 10 and the other person has 12 supporters. The one with 12 supporters wins. I mean, it's as simple as that.
Or we might decide that some threshold is necessary before you, I mean, 10 or 12 respondents, because one has 12, there may be an issue of, well, gee, eBayers actually don't exist as a defined community because eBayers are also Yahooers and they're also AT&Ters and they're also Microsofters.
Yep.
And so they've chosen, if you can only get that level of support, you probably are not a community. That doesn't mean eBay might not.
Let's get back into the selection criteria. We're not in selection criteria in terms of whether you meet the threshold to have a COD. So all these people have got through that phase and they can have a COD. The question is, two people want the same COD. And we're trying to choose which of those two applicants gets the POD. One method is just purely to, we could do nothing more than go on technical chuck is one option. In other words, we go back to our selection criteria that we have, and it'll be similar to .NET. You know, you say, I've got X number of servers, and I've got so big a computer, and you get through on that basis. That would tend to pretty much benefit the incumbents predominantly. If you add some additional criteria here and you say, okay, level of documented community support, then you could have, I don't know, .Africa or something, or something that relates to that community, that there isn't really any established registered operator, but these communities of people in Africa, there's overwhelming support in whatever this POD is. So this additional criteria, you know, maybe that's a better outcome.
This is
Banner,
and then Tom.
Okay, I think you have an idea on the right track if you base the thing on a community. Or we might just ask specifically when they would use that. And an easy answer would be, if the string is intrinsically related to a sizable community on the, sizable in the sense of the internet, then they would require document support of the relevant community, not just any, not just even the community at large. We want the relevant community to be proper.
So slow down a bit. If the string is intrinsically related
to a sizable community, the name string is intrinsically related to a sizable
so
community.
So define sizable?
Yeah. It was not as prepared to see globally to be a sizable community or internet.
Yeah,
well, it's 10 million people. I mean, that's sizable.
Let's take .cat. I think if you had the community of cat lovers and the community of Catalan speakers, and they're both going for .cat, I think you'd probably give it to the community of cat lovers because there's more of them. I mean, that's pretty much your criteria.
You might want to avoid some of the adjectives. I don't think they're necessarily essential to our discussion here. I don't think we have to define sizable. If there's a defined community, whether it's big or small, it could still be valid.
Yeah, that's fine. I deleted that by mistake. Start again. Sorry, Ben.
So we have, basically, if the string is intrinsically related to a community, or the software is a community, whatever, then we would use the criterion of support by the relevant community. The other thing is, the ICANN itself does not necessarily have to decide that. We can basically ask the applicant to state in case of contention, which arbitration panel, which arbitration mode, WinCycle, WIPO, whatever. There are arbitration systems available all over the place. They say which one they take. If they don't agree in the same, then ICANN will have a default arbitration panel that will not be run by ICANN. It's another panel that runs it, and they just wait for the outcome. So it does not, as long as there's some criteria, any arbitration panel can have, it can handle it, and it will not keep ICANN busy during that time.
Hey, Bruce, can I just get clarification? Are we under conflict here? If there is a conflict in two strings, that's when this stuff is
going to be
just under conflict.
Just then, yeah. At the moment, I'm talking about dot sport and dot sport.
Yeah.
So, yes, that's exactly right. It's only applying in.
The third thing is, you know, I think indeed it's a question of a category, but it's less category as a property of the COD. We have to start with a specific property, such as there is a community. It has that property, therefore this system applies. But we have other properties that may trigger other things. It is not just, you go down the sponsor category, or you go down the non-profit category, because then very difficult, because those categories all overlap. If you make it property-based, the overlaps will not cause a problem.
So one of the things that interests me a little bit, just picking up on what Tony was saying, in the early discussion saying that things like religious terms might be an issue, it may well be that not Islam is okay. If you can demonstrate or the GAP or whatever panel who was convinced that the Islamic community generally supports the creation of that. But it doesn't necessarily have to be not a religion. No ability to have a religious strength. It just means that if it is a religious strength, it needs all this support for it. Yeah. Not that there necessarily is one for that, but I'll probably choose another example, but you know, it could be.
Your response to Chuck's question about whether or not we're to discuss the whether or not this specifically applies to more than one applicant, where there is contention, we try to ask you what do you do at the very beginning. Do you write the application on the basis that there could be...
Yeah, that's what I was asking. Yeah. We can come back to that. We can come back to that. Let's just keep working down.
We write the application on the basis that we could hypothetically be thrown into a lottery or an option.
Yeah, and you need to know what it is in advance. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Let's keep going down this line though. So can we have some more speeches just on this kind of language, like what kind of criteria we could have?
If we have a locate to promote something for you to send you the whole project, if you have a look at the methodology, you take will be very unfair to someone, right? So you kind of be fair and whatever you take, a lot of video, function or student content, you know, all these topics. The one thing I'm asking myself right now is if we have to decide to get what language. I mean, if there is a contention between two strings and both parties want to have three parties or five parties all want to have three, let them work it out. I mean, there must be one string left, right? There must be one party left. All the others, you know, if you're in the round, they cannot decide in that round who's supposed to carry that string forward, it's not going to go anywhere at all. So I don't know why we should break that law. You know, it could be up to the company to decide in a different position whether you want to move on with that or not. You know, and maybe the person who wants to have that sport, that's what he thinks, well, I'm not reading any sports. I would like to have baseball, you know, I'm ready for baseball. Okay, if you think sports, you know, that's all up to negotiation of how we want to work. Well, I don't know why we should deal with that, because it's grossly unfair
proposing there's an arbitration process that's used in arbitrage applicants.
I just think that there's a period of time to settle that dispute between themselves. If they don't come up with a solution in one company, yeah, all
of that information around peer review. If I next time again, wasn't it for sure that there's a certain money barrier from keeping people from accepting of every application that is out there just trying to hinder the course, right, from a 50 cent minimum? I'm pretty sure that if you're talking about real, regular, modern measures, you know, if people will sort out
whether it's a high skill or the same idea, you know, whether it's still a good idea to use it, maybe not, you know, who you could compete against and what the different models are. So, especially in the subject of the list, I don't see any problems.
You don't think that there's a good link to gaming, potentially, Tom, where you can block someone?
Yeah, I know.
So you put an application for the need to dispute it for sake of it.
At the end of the day, is it giving this a way to that person who just one of the plots in it, and I'm worried for them, the whole range of what they're doing to kill me, but I'm not worried at all. I mean, not all of that, the second period is when people tend to lie in, so there's no real way they're plotting at all times to be there.
Well, we have it. I think we have it. Yeah. I was going to make a similar point. That's why I wanted to get it now, to what Holmes was saying, that I think it's not that you require parties to work it out themselves, which could lead to people getting in there and trying to mess things up. You give them the first opportunity. Before you go to this resolution matrix, you say, look, we've got two applications for .sport. One possibility is you guys can share. You can come together. I mean, I think there's no reason that the Catalan language speakers and the cat lovers couldn't both share .cat. You could, you could conceivably have two separate uses for, that the namespace ought to be big enough to support, people coming together for those kind of things. Or, like Thomas said, if you have sport and sports, someone may say, well, I want football and I want baseball. They may work it out themselves. But if they can't work it out, and maybe give them, 4 weeks to do it, then you go through your resolution matrix. I would use mediation as an
argument. Yeah, I might use the wrong words, yeah. Yeah, that's kind of what I'm looking for.
Okay, yeah.
I don't actually know the difference, to be honest.
Mediation itself,
so arbitration could be the seizure.
But there's some definition of what the unsaid rule is, right? You can either say, well, as a first shot, why don't you type that as well? Then another shot might be for unsaid offer some sort of mediation, but yes, I think the parties can settle that amongst themselves first.
Yeah, I think that's right.
I've lost track of the queue. I thought that Marilyn and Tony were still in it. Is there anyone else? No? Tony? Or Marilyn?
I originally had the same presentation as Brett offered, which was to give them an option, and if they don't take that, you move on to some other ones doing it. So this is just a first opportunity they have for mediation. But following on from that, if during that mediation process they agree that one of them is going to continue to bid and the other maybe school in Maple, the other is going to perhaps have baseball, would there be a process that they can short circuit the process so they don't have to wait for the next round? Is that part of that mediation process?
That's why it's in there. In other words, this is all extreme conflict, which is still a process.
So it's like an administrative and still part of that.
Yes.
Yeah.
And
it
would be quite, so if we take that as an example, let's just spell that out for a second. One wants .sport. Applicant two wants .sport. They come up to an agreement and say, well, these guys are really interested in football. And these guys are really interested in baseball. That resolves string conflict. And then you process it in the order that they've got their application to. So application one goes first and application two goes second. So they've set a few positions, but they've just
swapped
the screen.
And
that
one
gets
four.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
in that realm. Yeah.
No, in the next step.
Yes, yeah. So coming back to what we're talking about, I sort of pick up where Verna was going. I still try to sort of make sure that we don't end up with the unpredictable processes from the point of view of the applicants. And that's why I'm always, and we had this debate a second ago, but I kind of want to revisit it, with whether you need to have this stuff done. I would think that you then go into this step after that, so if the mediation process fails, they can't reach agreement, then we go into this additional criteria, and then I think I'd ask them then to submit their supporting material at that point. And you might give them a quite constrained period of time to do that, so you make your own business decision. If you think there's going to be contention, you'd still probably obviously try and do all your preparation beforehand, and you're going to be in a better position. But you're not required to be compliant with an application, that's a different thing. So you then have, okay, you have reached agreement, you now have, 20 days to set it all, show your differentiation down. If you've already got that prepared, you're obviously going to be a lot better off with someone that's going to be starting from scratch at that point. And that can be just a little bit better the process.
Yeah,
Rick,
I pay the grants when you're after certain dates to ask the money to advance into the next stage. It would be possible, for example, that if you have some contention to advance to the next stage, that's before it's going to resolve the contention to solve the problem. If you can't do it, it's still going to ask them to want to move on to the next level. If you still can't, you can't end up with a situation where you have to pay all the application fees, which is a considerable amount of money, I would get. I still have no clarity whether they get the name or not. Now, so during that process, that might disqualify anyone because it's not living up to the criteria set. So then you don't have a protection anymore. It's not to be clear to the applicant that that might be happening and that there are cost constraints coming up to them. So I don't think that two or four or five companies for that matter now would run that risk to lose $200,000, whatever, maybe even only $50,000, for the chance of competing in the lottery at the end of the day. So if you pay that, it's always given the next chance to negotiate with them, and you might end up with no looking for the lottery.
That's probably a good idea, but they probably want to do that by a day refund process.
Yeah, I don't think I want to try to design that process as a committee, but I think to start we want to think about the application fees and whether they're paid all up front, the refunds and so on. But I think if we've got the step C, I would say that both applicants would be paying an additional amount to do that step C. In other words, it's significantly more cost to Lightland as well to be doing that work. If they can't resolve their string at that point, well, they're both paying $50,000 or whatever it is to do the next amount of work to resolve that contention. And that amount would be one refundable.
Sorry,
Naomi,
I'm
going to
In the discussion we had about up to now, I think that one of the criteria that I would like to see is a statement that you use the name and not just park it or participate in order to keep someone else from using it. And I think we're all in agreement on that, but if you go back up to, okay,
if you go back up to, so just let me capture that for a second. So basically,
what
a require warranty or something.
An attestation that you're going to use the name and a certain period of time in which you you make take steps towards the name.
Of a curve or whatever it is. Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, I think that's it.
Can I ask a clarifying question on that? Do you mean for any applicant or just once you get the conflict resolution?
I mean for any applicant, because I think that there's no, this is about opening the name space, not about picking, you know, we already talked about the fact that there may be a process by which names are never allowed to be made active because they're confusingly similar, et cetera. We've already gone through all that. But here in this process, we talked about the fact that some, there are people who do have enough money that they could pay the $20,000 or $50,000 and just keep going through the process in order to keep someone else from operating the name.
Also, there's a possibility that someone pays $20,000. He's not the one who could get the application, but then he's approaching, like, Dr. Gooden. Okay, we go off if you give us $100,000 or something like that. So application grabbing.
Yeah, so that's the other thing that should be dealt with in some way. You can merge, but you can't resell.
You don't have to resell. You just can say, look, we are also in the process. You make your half life, but we go away if you pay us a certain amount. It's a little bit like domain grabbing, but application grabbing. And if someone is seeing that someone is taking so much effort to get a top-level domain, then he knows, okay, you will easily pay $100,000 if the one is going away.
But a warranty is not going to change that. I mean, you sign a warranty and then you say, oh, yeah, you convinced me, fine.
Bruce, what we were talking about, I said that I thought there needed to be a statement that you are fine with the application and you have every intent to operate it. Then the question came up, Alexander raised the question, which I think is a valid question. People often buy licenses in other markets and then they turn around, they have no intention of operating the license, but they raise the price and sell it. Now, in operating a broadcast license, you can't do that without the approval of the allocating authority. Right? So let's say you get a broadcast license in the United States, and that gives you free over-the-air transmission rights. If you then merge or you decide to sell your license, there's a certain amount of notification that has to go on of the entity that gave you that license.
But that's a personal approval, right?
It's a personal
approval. What's the current situation with TOD agreements there? Because it was attached to .pro, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's probably very happy. I mean, it's one thing to transfer the rights to the contract. Also, you can have a contract with a company, and that whole company can be partners with it.
That's what's happening in Australia, actually. In Australia, just as a point of reference, you're not allowed to sell a domain name. I think what Marilyn's trying to say is you're trying to avoid people blocking access to the name space by keeping out competitors, registering every name that could possibly be.
You can talk. I think rather than a statement, I think what you might do is just sunset the right to the application. So you say that, you know, after you sign a contract with ICANN, you've got 18 months to go live, and if you don't go live for registrations within 18 months, we're going to put it back into the hopper and someone else can buy it. Yeah. Yeah.
So, Ken, you want to be in queue, Dan's next, and Ray? Tom, you're off, Dan.
I'm just wondering whether we're getting off topic too at the moment. I still want to keep as much as possible deal with the string conflict, but that issue is a broader issue of people registering any names for purposes. Yeah.
I want to go back and ask, I think that's a huge if at the beginning of C, and who decides the if, you know, is .cars is intrinsic or donated to some community, or is .sex or .flowers, how do you decide if a particular string is related to a community, and let's say for .flowers, one guy wanted to set up sites for local florists all around the world, and the other one is the International Flower Fanciers. How do you decide which one you should give it to, the guys who make money off it or the guys who like to, you know, websites about flowers? So I think it's a big if, and it kind of brings this subjectivity that you guys were worried about too.
It's just a different subjectivity, really.
So the question is, what is a community? Right? And I don't think, I mean, I understand the subjectivity, but I don't think you, a category of anyone who drives a car, it's hardly a community.
I think it is.
I think that's different. That's a subdivision of people who drive cars and chose to join a car club. Well, Dr. Chava went through that, right? They decided not to represent all travelers, but to represent entities that organize themselves into delivering.
Yeah, they chose to do that now. I guess what we're trying to identify here.
And that's why they chose to do that.
Yeah.
I think he's the applicant.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, yes. But I guess I know where Dan's going here is kind of, are we then just saying there is an additional criteria of the level of support? Maybe you strip out the third community.
I think
The other one, that by law, block association, digital organization, or whatever else. You know, who is the community behind that? In that testing process, the waiting goes to the one who's demonstrating who is there.
Yeah, what I'm suggesting here, I'm just wary of what Dan, and I'm thinking about this as well. This is more of a case of the if not. I mean, another way of doing that is just take this first phrase out. Then use the additional criteria, the level of support of the community. But not ultimately, and that's what I understand, we're talking about the registrants of that name. That must be another way of defining
it. You know, I was thinking, it's almost... It makes sense when we're talking about two Berlins, that the Berlin with the support should get it over the one that's not. You know, but when you've got a broader word, so you've got .web, and you've got someone who wants to sell generic .webs to everyone in the world versus someone who says, well, you know, .web should only go to web developers and web designers. I've got all the support of the web developers and web designers. Well, clearly the higher utility of .web would be to go to everyone in the world. Even though they're, you know, someone is trying to take this very broad word and you know, make it a small sponsored community, possibly in order to get higher in the queue. So I think this is not a solution that would fit every example.
I'm just sort of seeing if somebody would be conscious of the status, but I know what Kevin did up is,
they had the concept that place names, governments could put forward they wanted a particular place name, and I think it was pretty much resolved. If two people wanted Sydney, for example, because I think there's a Sydney in Nova Scotia, there's a Sydney in Australia, there might be Sydney somewhere else as well, Nova Scotia, Canada. But I think they basically resolved to give it to the biggest community. So two of those, and that was, you know, you can look up population stats and say, okay, the two Sydneys, this is the bigger one, we gave it to them. That's fairly objective, really. That's how they resolve that confusion. But I'll just think...
To answer the first question, which I think is interesting, I would have to disagree with his analysis, because if there were two of these .web applications, and one had a community who was web developers, and they said that is the utility you want to use for that, that, to my mind, is actually a greater public good than merely the person who wants to use it
for commercial purposes or whatever, because dot web doesn't mean anything specific to an individual more so than Colinfo or Viz or whatever. So I think, again, you've got to be very careful in terms of examples you choose and the nature of utility. So I think community can work for many examples.
How about I just use the wording? The wording I've just changed it to slightly to get around this a little bit is to say then use the additional criteria of the level of support of the community of potential registrants within that CLD, to be used more generally, to resolve contention. And so then basically you're saying then both applicants, well, the applicants would have a time frame to support, supply this additional material. So if you've already built up, let's say you've got a big membership of web developers and you can show that they're all, you know, keen to register dot web, and then the other applicant says, everyone wants to register dot web, so where's your evidence? So, well, it's obvious, I will do, then I would give it to the one that's got the web developers. Even though the potential user base might be different, the party that's actually got the actual evidence that they've provided that material.
But I guess the people who want to sell to everyone in the world could also come forward with, you know, 500,000 pre-registrations and, you know, say, yeah, here's what we've got. Yeah.
There's a queue. Tom, Ken, Ray, and Albert?
Yeah, however you want to twist it, I mean, it's basically really contest, isn't it? I mean, someone has to decide which business idea he likes better and who should be awarded with a name. And this is, by definition, unfair because you have to make a decision in some way. It doesn't really have anything to do with what the person can bring forth. I mean, just imagine that a person who says that web is for the whole global community and he doesn't really have that support, you know, but he might get it in the next couple of years because he's
able what we're saying here, though, which is different, Tom, is they have to actually show that evidence. That's what we're adding to the process.
Yeah, but still, it's all to show. It stays a purely conscious way. The decision is made. Is you can throw a dice and it's not as fair as making a decision on one of the decimals. It's not resolvable in a fair manner. So
it's a competitive process at this point, and it's the two applicants that provide the best information. And ultimately, Tom, I think we've got to have some way of dealing with that, and I think we've got some steps here that say we're going to first use the criteria A, in other words, you know, do they meet the technical criteria and all the stuff that they have to do as part of the application, they pay their fee, etc. Secondly, we're trying to move to mediation, which is obviously the ideal outcome, and we try to encourage them to select different streams and, you know, be able to compete with each other. And then thirdly, we're saying, okay, well, if you can't come to an agreement at that point, then you provide additional evidence of support of the community-based potential registrants. This is not quite the same as the business case. The business case might be, I have identified the market opportunity and I've got a great marketing plan and all that sort of stuff. This isn't evaluating a marketing plan. This is you would actually have to show evidence that people want you to run that CLD. And they will register in that CLD.
Chris, let us ask a point of clarification before we go through the queue again. This idea assumes that there is some kind of sponsorship or charge.
No, it doesn't at all. No, definitely not.
Good. Thank you. Okay, fine.
Okay. So let's go through the queue again.
Ken, Ray,
yeah, a couple of comments. First of all, I would want to make sure that if we got into a situation where you, let's say, we'll use the dot web situation, that there wouldn't be some sort of a fallback position so that in an arbitration, somebody could come along and say, well, if that's the case, you don't need dot web, will give you dot int or dot int or something like this. I mean, the process has to be clearly defined up front. If you're going to be using criteria, then you have to have an effective way of measuring criteria. 500,000 registrations doesn't mean anything if it's 10 guys speculating on 50,000 names each. You know, so all I'm saying is, and I can look at it from Dan's standpoint and from the staff standpoint, you create a huge mess for yourself if you don't clearly define the criteria to be used in any of these conflict situations
or find additional material evidence. what evidence is acceptable, basically.
Right.
And absolutely, at the start of that part of the process, that would have been very clear.
Now, we get installed into the procedure of the actual gravitation. Doesn't that mean
no, we're talking about C. Oh, well, you're talking about arbitration now. So D was mediation. Yeah. So the other option, which I think someone mentioned earlier, which I'm okay with as well, is the third option is to use an arbitration process.
The only point I was making there, Werner, is that if you're going to have an arbitration process, it has to be clearly defined as to how the arbitration process will be managed so that someone knows that there is equity in that process and they can, there has to be a level of expectation. That's what I mean. They have to have a set of rules or criteria to manage the arbitration that the people can buy into, just like the arguments, isn't it?
Let's pick up on the point you made. One approach here is that you have an arbiter that's defined up front. The other approach is that the parties agree on the arbiter. Is that what you were suggesting?
So it is good to say, look, everybody has spent three arbitration corners. Again, local, US, hospital, investment, corners, developers. And they have their costs of arbitration direction. Well, what do you think? What do you look at that?
No, I don't think that's the same thing. What Ken is saying, when you're arbitrating, you've basically got to say, I've got a dispute here. Somewhere you've got to define the rules of which you're going to make that decision.
Well, the UDR is a perfect example. When you register a domain name, you buy into a process that's clearly defined, and you have your choice of who manages the dispute. But the point I'm making is you know what you're getting into. You know that you have certain rules that arbitration is run.
Is this just combining C and D here that you could use an arbitration process where this additional criteria has been evaluated by that arbiter? Is that what we're saying, rather than necessarily using my term?
Yes, indeed. They have the terms. In most communities, it's already in the interfere a local arbitration form that has to be wrong in our situation. And if they do that, then they cannot come back to you after you're going to be handled by their wife. If they're part of the region, well, they don't want to read that arbitration form anymore. It's good for them to have that to sound good.
Yeah. I was probably getting down into blind levels of micromanagement there, but if we just forget the concept at the moment, we're using an arbitration process here that uses the additional criteria for level of support, and then we build that, how that arbitrator's chosen, all that, we'll build that into the application process.
Yeah, Chris, if you just ended something there, I'll get the wrong question. I'm not sure that I would agree with
which bit was that, sorry?
Well,
I guess it's the difference between whether ICANN does it and whether they're, or whether the two parties agree on an arbiter to do that.
Exactly. It depends on that the recommendation should be ICANN who should consider either it budget or an option to get into an external arbiter or something.
I think what Werner was suggesting is that the parties themselves are agreeing on that arbiter. It's a bit different.
So you can probably always say,
I can mock him, then.
They won't agree on that.
Yeah.
But if they have to leave,
they want
to be
careful
quickly by
that
and one way
around that. Well, then you have to be careful in the beginning. So, Phil, I'm just trying to, some of these things, I know the .com agreement has this process in at the moment. I think it goes to mediation, then it goes to arbitration, is that right? There's a series of steps when you have a dispute. Is that correct? The proposed .com agreement? When there's a dispute about something. Yeah. So what are the steps though? Isn't there like a mediation step and then an arbitration? That's right. Yeah.
But Bruce, there's a difference between
external arbiters who are experienced in the process of arbitration and the skills needed to make the set of decisions that we're asking to make, which is the basis of community support evaluation. And any people at the moment in the world, funnily enough, who at least has some experience about community support evaluation, I'm afraid I can evaluate it as you so far, albeit at the level of the job they've done. So I don't think you can't just knock this aside and say somebody else can do it. It's not the process of arbitration that's the problem, it's the process of judgment about the community support that is the question, and that's not
the skills that are in the ICC at the moment.
Yeah, if you throw something like this to the American Arbitration Association or the International Arbitration Association, you're not going to know what to do with it. I mean, this is just so far beyond anything they typically get that, they would need a lot of background work.
Well, my question is about that if you arbitrate something, people have actually to understand each other. It's to arbitrate law. Just imagine that you have two strings that are really, they're all alike, but they're two different languages, and you have applicants from two different nations which don't speak English. The whole thing gets very, very complicated. So someone has to kind of aggregate that and make a decision at the end. I don't know if you come...
Let's keep it simple at the moment. I think there's variations to this that we can learn on experience. You've got to remember we're just creating a new process here, and if we're creating lots and lots of levels and different bodies, we have to build the experience of someone doing this first, and then maybe you outsource it or start using other providers.
I'm worried we have kind of abstract examples. I'm like, this is what you got on the board is going to help us when we get 10 applications for .shop or .sex or .cars. How are we going to put those 10 people in a room and have them mediate, and how are we going to figure out who has the most support for .cars, and should we really be looking for who has the most support among, who has the most car clubs on that, or maybe there's some innovative new use some entrepreneur has for .cars
that they have to show that in their materials. So that basically would have to show this innovative use with all these people that support that innovative use.
What if it's just one guy's crazy idea that
that would lose against the other party that has that information? So as I'm saying, it is a comparative process.
So making a judgment value, you kind of add up the number to one.
It's still an objective criteria, though.
So it's like a democracy.
That should be dealt with by choosing another string.
So you're sort of proposing a democratic process. We're going to vote for who gets it. Whoever gets the most votes is the most worthy.
We're just trying to come up with a... We have this problem. We can't go away from it. We can use lottery, we can use random, which is totally objective, or you get a comparative. And then comparative, you've got a comparative process.
C and D have pretty much answered what I was going to say. Thanks.
Yeah, I've been getting confused on the level of support of the community. Now, you answered part of it is yes, because it ends up who can gather the most pieces of paper in the 30 days, the most signatures, the most whatever.
Yes.
But then when we combine it with what Philip is saying in terms of, well, there's the quality of the paper. In other words, the quality of a web developer is somehow stronger than the quality of just a web user. You say the good of the community. Which one's more for the good of the community? And that's a qualitative statement.
I'm saying, give a quick example. The web designers were indicating the existence of the community. The other guy was merely saying, indicating the existence of speculation, this is opportunity.
Yeah.
And in that case, the public interest in my mind is served by...
Okay, but if the second guy can come out and get the pre-registrations that show there were far more people that were willing to take the .web,
right,
then your community, you'd be fine with the guy that got the signatures getting it.
Probably didn't take Rockingham and you need to get the registration on that as well.
Showing your level of support, and I think the LF 11 years ago showed that.
that people perceived that it was a different system, it was a different prize that was under contest. And 40,000 members from, you know, 30,000 from other countries did skew that contest. So it's not just that was not a quality.
Yeah, I think, which is, I think we've got to kind of agree that this is something that is worth pursuing, and then I think the staff would need to do a lot of consideration to this last point, which is need to clearly define what evidence is acceptable, because what you don't want is some of the gaming that's happened in the past, which is, you know, as Ken says, you sort of say, well, I'm going to buy 100,000 names myself, you know, then 100,000 people, you know. Yeah.
So anything that counts can be gained.
Yeah, but I mean ultimately it's that's what happens when you have contention. I mean, whether you're going to use financial resources down an auction or whatever you're going to do. If you're going to go random, then the idea is you put as many applications as you can, because that increases your probability of success. You know, they're all gainable at this point in the game. But I think what you want to do is at least make sure the rules of the game are well understood. That's all we can do.
Well, it's still, what I say again is I don't think that all names have to be aligned. We don't have to define the process which is dealing with all kind of conventions. We don't have to. There's no need to introduce every TLD someone comes up with. So if you cannot decide on who's having the best idea and who's having the best community, and then no one is getting it, period. You just have to make sure that existing cannot be easily gained.
Well, as long as you don't, there's no mechanism of blocking, that's all that worries me with that idea. I understand what you're saying. It's just that someone can then just put in a deliberately an application to block you, and then just say, I'm never going to agree with you, therefore you don't get to create that CRM. That would be a negative impact of what you're suggesting. Especially the confidence level, I mean, I'm trying to kind of move, this is not an easy problem to solve. We're sort of stuck in between the two, and there's pros and cons of all of these things. I think this is moving to somewhere that's more, I would think, an acceptable sort of, or a compromise. I can see that from the intellectual property and business and ISPs are seeing that at least, and even some of the public comments like from the doc, yesterday, but that's the Doc Berlin, you know, you can see that this is something you can address. So if someone else puts up Doc Berlin, I know that I'm going to go through this process. I'll first try to negotiate with who someone else is. If I can't reach that, then I'm going to go into this third phase. And we do, picking up the sort of stuff that you're talking about, Dan, we need to think about what that evidence is. To me, it really doesn't matter what it is, right? Because as long as it is clearly, as Ken says, is clearly lined up the front, what that's going to be. And if that's an online voting system, so be it, as long as they both know that that's what the system's going to be.
You say online voting system. I thought we were talking about a... polling is, you know, I wasn't
suggesting that. Okay. I was saying that if that was used, as long as that's clearly understood by both parties, that that's the method that was going to be used, that's all I'm saying. So it's not something that suddenly comes in 6 months after they've done everything. It's just got to be defined right up front what evidence will be required, whatever that evidence is.
And remembering that this is in the early, this is just about qualification to complete the bid.
Yes, exactly.
I had to go. I'm just not comfortable that we've gotten finished talking about it.
Well,
see. I mean, we were just talking about the whole voting thing. Not sure that he agrees, but does cause small communities a problem. For example, that cattle, that cat. The Catalan community could have never gotten more signatures than cat fanciers. And so there could be lots of these examples where you would have a community that could want something that could never overcome
the barrier of somebody who was good at sales going out and saying, just give me lots of signatures that you're going to sign up. So I still think that the level is problematic in those.
Yeah, but that's it. The mediation is the perfect solution between cat lovers, between cat made more sense, and what cat allows, which is what perfectly well as the field of activity.
Yeah, they could both use that field.
It tends to be the historical accident, the three lenses that are perspective.
Yeah.
As long as the mediator doesn't have the right point of view on it.
Yeah.
I think that's wrong here because we don't know what the fee line means hypothetically in some other language that suddenly is given away without any opportunity.
And this fee is an offer to pick up on your comment, Dan. If you have 20 parties that want the thing, then probably a mediation process is not going to work, and then you're dropping down into fee. Whereas I think if we've got two parties that want to, then it's a constrained problem. I mean, but B is you drop to C if B isn't feasible. Yeah, I think that's how that's dealt with. It's not a, you first, is the thing compliant? If not, you start with 10 applications, you're down to 8, and then you say, well, is the mediation possible? You deal with those 8 parties and see if that's possible. If it's not possible, then you drop it down to C.
I don't have any questions about A or B. I just think C, we're still in a gray area of, when it comes down to it, you're asking ICANN to make case-by-case determinations on who deserves it.
Absolutely, yeah. And ultimately, someone has to make...
Some people didn't like it in the first place.
Yeah. What we've constrained it, though, is we've cut it down from being something that's applying to everything, something that's applying to contention, and then only if they can't mediate. And so we're trying to get that down. We're reducing the amount of time that we need to do that, and then this is an additional step, an additional fee, and you're right. Ultimately, someone has to make a... It's a last resort. Yeah.
For those 20 companies who want shop or cars or sex,
yep.
It's basically a blind shot at who that ICANN committee or whatever it is or ICANN panel.
You still have to have very clear, this is what I'm saying down here. The evidence, that last statement's the important thing. So it's not just the case if you put up anything, you know, Ken decides that his TLD, he's going to submit a bunch of letters, and Avery decides that her TLD, she's going to submit some sort of online voting results that no one's verified. You know, they're not comparable things. Whatever your system is,
so somebody will have to decide, who do I give it to, the guy supported by 39 SPs or the guy supported by 1,000 anonymous registrants?
Yeah, anonymous. So what you're saying, yeah, you've got to define what those things are. They have to be... Oh, that's not what I'm trying to spend time doing this, but I'm offline, I've explained it before. But this shouldn't be something that can be gained by anonymous stuff. You were specifying the criteria that they are verifiable people, and you could verify it by ringing Canada or something. At random, if you ring them up, they'll only
kiss. This process would work for a single letter once, too.
Yeah.
It's going to be game is to get .shop or .cars or .sex.
Of course it is.
So the 20 guys are going to follow whatever you do to
that's
get those.
And one of those will win. And one of those will win, Dan. And as long as it's clear that all of those parties up front what the rule is, what the evidence needs to be, you need to make sure it's verifiable so someone can't just write a script. Like if you put up a website and say, submit public comments, I can write a script that would fill that in seconds. So that wouldn't work. You've got to use... get some experts to help you build that, basically.
There's a couple of people in the queue, but can I draw everyone's attention to page 24 of the big document, where there's several suggestions from several different people about improving the application process. And I was going to talk about raising, but he's maybe run out of the room, but he's now back in the room, so he can speak to his own bit. But there are also things from Derek Krasnowski about pre-evaluations and improving quality of applications. There's also material from Michael Clay about the application process as well. That's from page 24, so people might want to take a look at that as well. And there were quite a few people with their hands up. Does anyone want to go to Ray and Tom and Philip?
That is an issue, sorry.
Ray, Tom,